Blake and let you have his paper. You know him, don't you?
No, but I'm sure Frank can get me in touch with him.
Yeah.
Bill Buchanan.
Yeah, he was a professor of politics.
Okay.
He is now emeritus.
Now, I want to jump back 11 years, because you mentioned something a while ago that I was intrigued by. You said that you and Dr. Gaines arrived on campus at the same time. Now, obviously, I know very little about Dr. Gaines. He's way before I ever came around here, but his name sure does keep coming up. Tell me something about Francis Pendleton Gaines. What are your impressions of him?
Well, this is where I should remember my release, I guess. Well, this is not thought out and organized in advance like statements should be. But, well, not that it should be, but discreet to do. Gaines has been much criticized as being a kind of a hypocrite and a professional praiser of Robert E. Lee and a fundraiser and somewhat lacking in integrity and so on. And I found this to be untrue. I thought I admired Gaines, realizing, of course, that he was an expert actor, performer. He was the best. He was in the school of Southern Baptist ministers, and he was eloquent, a real orator, and he could move people. And I remember one night going out with him on a speech tour of the county where he spoke to a couple of Ruritan clubs, and in the peroration of his talk on Lee or some similar subject at one at Carr's Creek, he began to weep a little with tears in his eyes. Well, he gave the same speech about an hour or two later on the other side of the county, and I was with him, and he gave it at the same point. He again began to weep a little when he was delivering this thing. I thought this was amazing. He was a real, what kind of an actor do you call it? A method actor? Well, he threw himself into it and believed these things. Well, underneath this, and so I recognized a certain amount of showmanship in this, but he was fundamentally a very decent man, very fair, I thought. And he was also a little, he was always cooperative with me and sympathetic and never, he tried to embarrass me, and I was under attack once or twice from right-wing conservatives, and he came to my defense. And also, he, what was I going to tell you? Let me think a minute.
Well, that's something that he did for you, were you, or about the kids, or what?
Well, he would, I was never aware that he ever did anything really mean or ugly or unprincipled to anybody on the faculty, and he would take listen to criticism of his faculty, but he would always find a way of taking care of it without doing any harm to the member of the faculty. A good example, I don't remember the circumstances, but somebody in the School of Commerce was bitterly denounced by a prominent alumnus because reportedly this faculty member had advocated in class 100% death tax, which just confiscated the fortune, and of course the affluent alumni blew up. And, well, I don't know what Gaines did about this, except that the poor guy, you remember they called him?
That
must have been Kubla. Yeah, that was Kubla. And, but I think he did leave, but under...
He did. He was here, I think.
Yeah, under pleasant circumstances. There was nothing mean about the treatment he got. I think Gaines treated him quite well. Well, what else could I say about it? Oh, well, I know what I wanted to tell you. Once in a while, when he had to say something about some project in which I was interested and had a little special information, he would ask me to write a draft for him to rewrite and put into his speeches. And I discovered that I was writing in his style, this florid oratorical style. God, the big round words came flowing out there, and I thought, this is awful. That is what I mean by being infectious. It's easy to fall into that.
Would he have liked Bice and Quinquagenary?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
He did have a silver tongue. He had that
read. Yeah, he was a very popular
writer. Well, I've read a couple of his speeches, and they're beautiful. Uh-huh. They're very quotable.
Yeah.
They're eloquent. They really are. And was he naturally that way? Was that his personality? Or was it when he got up to give a speech?
Well, I think he was brought up in the Southern Baptist church tradition. And his papa may have been a Southern Baptist minister. They are good orators, most of them, I'm told. In fact, many of the Black Baptist ministers follow the same patterns. And you know how eloquent some of them are.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Gaines was a professor of literature, wasn't he? I think that was before he became president of things.
While he was here, he taught the Bible as literature.
Yes, yes.
Even though he was president, I think he kept it, of course, once in a while.
But the things he had to do as part of his job, like being nice to very rich elderly ladies and so on, would incite some satirical comment, you know, among the more cynical members of the faculty. But he never actually stole any money or anything like that. He was very nice to them. And they should have been friendly toward Gaines because he was so good to them.
Now, who were these old, dear old ladies? I keep hearing references to these
Mrs.
women.
Mrs. DuPont was one, but there were others even more important for the university, and I don't remember their names.
So why were these women so enamored of this all-male university?
Well, partly because of Gaines. He was very courtly and gallant to them, and I'm sure flattered them a good deal.
Maybe the Lee connection. I don't know whether that had anything to do with
it. Yes, I'm sure it did.
The connection to General Lee?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, he is so unimpeachably correct and nice. Genteel. You can't do better than a college president of a school, of a college for the sons of affluent Southern families. That's the height of correctness. No danger, no threats involved in that.
No.
One of Dean's favorite stories was that when he went out to see one of our alumni, a rich alumni, and she in Chicago, they'd have dinner and then go to the billiard room, and this man would always say, if you don't mind, doctor, will you walk ahead of me? I carry my wallet in my back pocket, and I've had experience with college presidents. He liked to tell that story. Then another of his favorite stories is the one about one of his graduates married a very sweet girl, but they broke up, had a divorce. And Gain would say, yes, they were incompatible. He didn't have enough income and she wasn't patible. And this was a surefire joke that everybody would laugh at, a student assembly. Oh, but I'm beginning to wander like an old man. What else?
This great wandering. You mentioned that there was a bit of conflict from your political persuasion and the persuasions of some of the other people at Washington and Lee. I'm intrigued by that idea because you and I probably come from the same direction. And I'm trying to make my way in this very conservative environment.
Mm-hmm.
How did you do it? How did you last that long and be comfortable in such a conservative environment?
Well, I had a feeling that I was considerably more liberal, if I may use that word, than most members of the faculty. Although I may be wrong about that. There was a lot of them that were sort of sub rosa, they were covert liberals and didn't admit it. But I had the impression that I was relatively left on the faculty. But I never talked politics. I never used the classroom to propagandize or to advocate anything. I was always very careful to give both sides of every subject. I would expose my students to the most radical ideas, but it was always radical on both sides, both radically left and radically right. And I never had any complaint, really. Do you recall any, Jane?
Yeah.
Except once I was criticized, the Glass family got criticism from the publisher of the Nashville paper, whose name I've forgotten, but it was very well known at the time.
The Glass family before.
The what?
Glass?
Yeah, the Glass family, when they were on the committee for the Lee School of the SNPA. And this publisher complained about me, and I've forgotten what it was, but I think it had something to do with the American Newspaper Guild. I think I had said something either favorable about the Guild or at least not condemning it. And that was the labor union, excuse the publishers.
Yes,
and this Nashville publisher was pretty upset. And he wrote to Carter, no, not Carter, who was the Glass I dealt with?
Carter?
No, it was
Tom's
father. Well, anyway, he described me in one passage as like a bird dirtying its own nest. And well, Glass and the president just laughed about it, paid no attention to it. But that's the nearest thing to an overt political issue that I can recall from my entire career here.
How about the student body itself? Did you find them conservative?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think Washington only attracts?
They all come from affluent conservative families. Most of them, and it's always been a rabid Republican place, I think. I don't talk politics with these members of the faculty. No, that's another thing. I don't say so with any pride. It's sort of craven, but I've avoided politics and religion during our whole time here. Do you remember any discussion of this at all?
No, I don't.
I am not very churchly either. In fact, I never go. But I never mention religion. It never comes up. I guess that's the answer to your question. It has been no problem. Gaines, I think, was curious about my religion, and I remember an interview with him when I first got here, and he was asking me about various things, my views on this and that, and I could see him getting more and more nervous and more agitated, and I thought, what's he going to ask next? About sex? No, it was about religion. He said, Professor, you aren't actively opposed to religion, are you? And I said, oh, no. I said, in fact, if you are interested, I have at home, I am a baptized member of the Presbyterian Church, and I have at home a diploma with 12 gold, a Robert Reich's diploma with 12 gold seals, indicating a year of perfect attendance at Sunday school. Well, Frank Gaines looked greatly relieved. He smiled and changed the subject to something else. And that was that. Well, that was true. I
put in 12 years of Catholic school, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, what about these rabid Republican students in 1970? I understand things got different here in 1970.
We weren't much involved, were we? I don't recall very much about it. We were, we personally were FDR's new dealers in our politics. And,
what year did you say?
1970.
Well, yeah, well, that's, but...
I'm leaping around, aren't I?
Yeah. Well, let's see, but in that tradition, liberal Democrats, and we didn't get involved in any political fights. Did we work for anything?
No, we didn't. Well, you
did some publicity for...
county politics for just a little bit, but very, very...
Yeah, I was on the Democratic County Committee for a short time.
But when the students closed down the university?
Yes, I remember.
Were you involved in that at all?
Well, not directly, because my students were very nice to me. And I remember it vividly because I marched in an anti-Vietnam parade. Was that during the war? Yes, it was. And
yeah.
Betty Munger was marching with us. We were about the only ones that I recall. We started at the courthouse and walked to the campus. And I felt very brave and expected to have a shouting mob out there on the side, but nobody was there. Nobody paid any attention. There was a... Many of these radical students were good friends of mine, and they let me alone. And I tried to find out about that way when they had me labeled as a red or something. But that didn't seem to be it. I remember asking Aunt Bertha, what was her name?
Jan
Chabelle, a very perky little girl who worked on the campus for a while, and Fielder Cook humorously calls her his Aunt Bertha. Well, anyway, I said, I don't understand why these radical students, the hippies, the laid back ones, why they treat me with respect and are nice to me. And she said, well, you are the prick. And I said, well, that's very nice, but why am I not? And I never could find out because I didn't smoke marijuana. I tried it once, but didn't like it.
Didn't inhale.
But didn't inhale.
I recall that era there. We did have a lot to do with the so-called hippies. The McLeod, Jan.
That's right.
A whole bunch of kids.
I had quite a circle of friends among these radical students.
Tell me about the idea of forming friendships with the students. Did you socialize with students and?
Some, not very much.
Yeah, not intimately. We didn't go out on drinking parties with them or anything like that.
I remember we had this one group out here. It was the McLeod group. What was your name? Four or five of them, I can't remember. Eli Fishpole was one, wasn't he?
Yes.
Is that John McLeod?
John Gunner. And Peter O'Shaughnessy.
O'Shaughnessy, yeah. Do these names mean anything?
Oh, yes. Yes. Was it John McLeod?
Yeah, John McLeod was here. His wife,
Winifred Holt.
Winifred.
Yeah. Did you know that?
Yes, very well.
From your previous
I went to their wedding, yes.
Mm-hmm. Their wedding?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so did we.
Well, then we've met before.
Out there on the
banks by the river.
Of the
mm-hmm.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were there watching the priest from West Virginia with the scalpel, or whatever you call it, around his neck. Are they divorced now?
I heard they got back together.
They did. They're in California.
I heard that. I don't know current status, but I heard they got back together.
Jan knows about that, right? She was here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you knew Jan Chazal.
That name is very familiar to me, but I don't remember why I knew her.
Because she was here.
I can't picture her, but the name is very familiar to me. Did she work in...
At WNL?
Yeah, I don't know what office she was in.
She did.
Did she work in the press office with Bob Keefe? And
she might have.
Yeah.
I'll bet that's how I knew her.
She might have, because that may be... I mean, Fielder picked her up on the campus. Fielder Cook is an alumnus, and he's a very good friend of ours, and comes back. He lives in California. He comes all the time to visit us when he's in the East. And he picked her up on the campus one day, and he was coming to dinner out here, and he called me up in the middle of the afternoon, and he said, "Do you mind if I bring Aunt Bertha?" And I said, "No. Extra guest, you know, middle of the afternoon." So about 6:30, he arrives at the front door with this young chick.
Yeah.
Little blonde gal. That's so big.
That was his Aunt
Bertha. This is Aunt Bertha.
So you did socialize with students.
Yeah, but it was very limited.
Very limited.
Not really free and open sort of thing. I think we looked too formidable to them.
Hmm. Quite a gender gap there, I would say.
Generation gap.
Mm-hmm. Gender, yeah.
I had a feeling that they treated us with respect and not especially with affection. But they felt that we were had liberal views, I think, and liked that.
Sure, it's oddball. Not like the usual faculty members.
I have some very specific questions that Frank would like to hear you talk about. He wants to know about your involvement in the evolution of the Southern Intercollegiate Press Association and about the conferences that used to be here.
Well, we really should show Mame some of this stuff, I think. Well, when I became head of the department, I inherited the Southern Interscholastic Press Association, which had been formed about the same time as the school, as the department, in the mid-1920s. And there had been some state associations of school editors. These are editors of newspapers, magazines, and yearbooks primarily. And then there was the Columbia Press Association, which covered the country, and then there was a national one. Well, Ellard or somebody got the idea of having one for the southern schools, and it worked very well. There were 75 delegates to the convention the first year I had it, 1934, I guess. And the last year I had it, we had 1,800 delegates. And I have books about it over there. And it seemed to be a very viable, active, interested organization. It was done with our left hand. We didn't spend much time and effort on it. It more or less ran itself. Well, we did arrange a big conference every year, and with critics of the publications and all that, and a big program of speakers. And it was a good diversion for our students, and it gave me a chance to bring in outside speakers. And
what kind of speakers?
Oh, newspaper men. We had everybody there. Who were some of them? Reston and Bart Childs. Who wasn't there? And then we always had a cartoonist every year, the man who did Little Abner and Mandrake the Magician, and who's the guy from Connecticut? Foster?
Yes.
Foster?
Prince Valiant.
Yeah.
Maria, now, how did you get these people?
Maria Manus was here, and Mrs. Ogden Reed, and Burke White.
Maria,
yeah.
Burke White.
Well, I'd invite them. I knew most of them from other contacts with them. Well, then I left the head of the department, and my successors gave it away immediately, first to the University of Georgia and then to the University of South Carolina. And there it is now, and thriving, doing even better now.
Now, who were the delegates?
They were editors of these publications and writers, staff members of secondary school publications, public schools and private schools, and their faculty advisors. I think it'd be a nice show.
I attended the Columbia all through my high school career, and yeah. I can remember it being a very important part of my life every
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
Well, this was particularly attractive to the girls who came, yeah. because they got to see all of Washington and the boys, and the journalism students were the helpers. They were shepherding these people around.
Uh-huh.
Would you mind showing me those two I brought down?
Yeah.
I have quite a few reports on the
Oh, good.
Convention.
Well, I'd like to look at those. Let me just ask you the other question that Frank had. He wanted to know about the Alfred I. DuPont Awards for broadcast.
Jane,
yeah.
Mame also wants to know about the Alfred I. DuPont Awards.
The what?
We are the DuPont Awards. We are prepared for that, too. All right, go, no, please
well,
get them.
I still haven't heard it.
The DuPont Awards.
Oh, the DuPont Awards.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to put the machine on pause while we get that.
Well, have I told you enough about the SIPA? That's all in these books I have here.
So tell me... The girls, was it all girls who came, or?
No, boys and girls.
Okay.
I don't know what the mix was.
And was this an annual event?
Yes, yeah. There was a convention here every year. It began in the fall, and later it was in the spring.
And where would all these kids stay?
Well, we got everybody took advantage of every room we could find. And sometimes they had to go a distance away, like Natural Bridge. Oh, what is that?
There weren't as many motels then. And I can remember you had Hope Lawson doing housing for these people.
Yeah.
They'd be put up in private homes.
What are those? Yeah.
This one is. No, send it again.
Is this the SIPA?
I'll tell you in a minute. No, that's the DuPont Award. There's two are DuPont.
And that's the film
one. SIPA. No, the film one is still over there. These are both SIPA.
Well, this will give you some idea of how they...
Okay, I'm going to put the machine on pause for a moment. I think you were involved in the founding of the radio station, WLUR?
Yes.
What happened there? How did that come to be?
Isn't that funny?
You did it.
Well, did it. We just decided that Washington and Lee should have a radio station.
It was passing. I mean, the radio was the thing.
When was this? About what year was that? I found the date just recently. 67, was it? 68, something like that?
Is that? No, it was before that.
Was it before that? Yeah. I just found a reference to it, so I do have the date.
I think it was before that. Way.
The origins of it go back to right after the war when various people and I talked about starting a radio operation here because it was everybody was doing it. I mean, that was the thing. It was a new means of communication. And particularly influential was an alumnus by the name of Gilmore Nunn, whose family owned a radio station in Lexington, Kentucky. And he gave me all the help and encouragement possible. And he sent us our first tape recorder, a rather elaborate one, which was actually our first radio station. We used it to originate programs which went out over WREL. And then there was a period in which we had a radio editorial room in Payne Hall, and we'd walk our copy, the boys would walk a copy down to WREL downtown office in the bank building in Lexington. And then later we began to take it out. The boys went out to the station to give the program. And then we've got a loop, telephone loop in, and we sent it out from Payne Hall by telephone to the radio station, and so on. One development after another, until finally I said, well, we have to have a station. And the administration was very much in favor of this, or at least didn't oppose it. I can't remember any enthusiasm, as a matter of fact. They had no objection, so I proceeded. It didn't happen that I had a good friend on the FCC by the name of Rosal Hyde, a commissioner. He was a Mormon from Utah, and he gave me a lot of help, and we got all the clearances and got the license, and had a commissioner down here to give the address at the opening of the station, and that's probably in one of these books somewhere. Well, there's a whole portfolio over there on the radio station, by the way.
So why did you think this was important? What did the radio station do for the students?
Well, of course, we had a major interest was familiarizing our students with the medium and learning all about it, including the use of it. And then it had a subsidiary, I would call it, value to me, a primary value to the students as an outlet for their talents and interests to programming. And one of my students in those early days is still on WLUR, Doug Harwood. You know him?
Very well.
Yeah, well, I think he began certainly his radio work in his student days, and he's still doing the 10-air program.
Yeah.
music for 10 years.
I thought his anti-headache machine was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I used to love listening to that.
Well,
yes, but I'm way out in the country now.
We've never heard it because we've been out here.
So we raised we got all the clearances and raised the antenna on the roof of Payne of Reed Hall. But I think it's been moved since then. Because I think it's somewhere else.
No, it's up on top of Reed Hall.
Is it? And, well.
He killed a couple of the crewmen putting it up, too, I think, I understand it.
Well, my first book of instructions on station operation is in there somewhere, too. May I have that?
No, you have some rather illustrious alumni who've gone through your program.
Yes, and some illustrious who didn't go through the program.
Was Roger Mudd one of your people?
No, he wasn't a major. He was a major in history, I think. I think I had Roger in class. I'm not sure about that. I know one of the sensitive subjects in my life is Tom Wolfe, who is supposed to be one of my students. And he was in my class, he says, and everybody says, and I had no recollection of it all of him. And in fact, I looked him up in the registrar's office one time to be sure that this is true. Yes, he was there. I used to get telephone calls when he became famous from people. I remember some newspaper man in Baltimore calling me up. And he wanted some funny stories about Tom Wolfe as a student. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but I don't remember Tom Wolfe as a student, and I certainly don't know any funny stories.
Well, that's a pretty funny story that you don't remember.
Yeah, yeah. Well, anything else?
Well, I think I've gotten plenty of good stuff for today. And if I may, after Frank and I listen to this, I expect it's going to bring up more questions, and I may give you a call back and see if I can come back again sometime.
Yeah, well, that was a pretty wretched performance, wasn't it?
Oh, it was just terrible, Tom. I'm really appalled.
Well,
I'm terribly disappointed.
Well, that's,
will you
I'm
disappoint
not
me again sometime?
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look at some of these scrapbooks and albums that you have here. I'll turn the machine off now and set you free from this microphone. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
All right. Well, I hope it wasn't too bad.
It wasn't too bad.